Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. I would imagine that almost all of us have been in this situation at one time or another. There's a joyous occasion. It could be a birthday, could be a wedding, something auspicious. And right around that time, something tragic happens. So let's say you're about ready to get married and you find out that a favorite aunt, or maybe even a not-so-favorite aunt, is dying. Or you find out that somebody has had a tragedy and can't make it to the wedding, or can't make it to this. And sometimes you even think, boy, should we even go through with this? This is kind of touchy. I remember a personal account. Many years ago, when my father died, it just so happened that his funeral was going to end up on the day of my little cousin's baptism. She was the daughter of my first cousins, Bill, and his wife, Diane. And so Diane approached my mother and said, you know, we can postpone the baptism. It just so happened that the funeral, of course, as funerals usually are, during the morning, and the baptism was at night. She says, we could do that. We just want to really respect our uncle. You know, this is a day to honor his life. And my mother said, absolutely not. You go ahead with the baptism. You go ahead with the festivities, because life goes on. And I know my husband would want it that way. And I was very, of course, proud of my mom for taking that attitude, which I agree is the right attitude. Mom was in no condition to attend the baptism that night, but I was, and I'm very happy that I did. And there was a part of the festivity that certainly was an homage to my father. But, of course, different people handle these situations in different ways. Today we're going to have a conversation with a local writer. Her name is Jane Griffune, and she has written an account of going to the baptism of her grandchild in Charleston, South Carolina, very shortly after the massacre that took place at Mother Emanuel Church. And it's quite interesting, because this was provided to me by a dear friend who thought this would be a good subject for Common Threads, and I agreed. Let me tell you a little bit about Jane Griffune. She was born and raised in Grand Rapids, and she lives here with her husband. She has two grown children, and she works at the Bookman in Grand Haven, one of the last independent bookstores that we have in the area. We welcome to Common Threads Jane Griffune. Hi, Jane.
Hello.
Jane, you've written an essay. This has not been published. I'm just curious, are people going to be able to have access to this? Is there any thought of publication, or are you going to put it on a blog? What's going to happen to this?
I'm hoping to publish it in a magazine. It is pending. I've submitted it to several places, but only recently.
Okay. It's interesting, because usually the conversations that take place on this show are about published works, where we try to incite people to go find these things and buy them and spend money, so it makes it worth your while to come here. This is not the case here. We can only talk about this and let people know that someday, somewhere, this might be available to them.
Certainly.
Okay. but we're going to give a good story, I think. So the name of your essay is "I Saw the Holy City," and the Holy City in this case is Charleston, South Carolina, a place that I have visited, but you clearly have a real handle on this city, and you make it sound very appealing. You make it sound like it's worth a visit, and you made me feel like, yeah, maybe I should get down there. I still have a cousin down there, two cousins actually, so I might head down there someday, because when I was there, it was Christmas time, and the whole focus was family more than the city. And you know the city pretty well. As a matter of fact, you say in your essay that you're not a tourist, you're a visitor. What does that mean?
It means that I do have a certain attachment to the city, and that I think I have a little bit more of an insight into the atmosphere. My daughter teases me about, well, she will from time to time say, oh, I just can't wait for these tourists to go home. And so there is a distinguishing thing.
She doesn't
there.
Mean you.
She means I'm a visitor, not right. a tourist.
Right.
And so, yeah.
And you say that things are truer, deeper, and less artificial. Is that correct?
I think the people of the city, business owners and neighbors and folks that you meet, enjoy that you enjoy their city, not just as a tourist, but that you get a deeper understanding of the community.
Sure, sure. So let's set this up. You have a daughter and a son-in-law already there, and then they have a child, a son, I believe, right? And his name is?
Cashin.
Cashin. And Cashin is about to be baptized. So you and your husband, what's your husband's name?
My husband's name is Tom.
Tom.
And my daughter moved from Charleston about a year and a half ago, but they still belong to the Grace Episcopal Church there. They now live in Southern Pines, North Carolina, because her husband's based there in Fayetteville. So,
I see.
But anytime there's events...
Mm-hmm.
It's
they
Charleston.
Would be in Charleston.
Correct. Sure.
Okay.
And
so you are aware that this baptism is happening, and then all of a sudden, as you are preparing for the trip, you hear about the massacre at Mother Emanuel.
Right? That's correct.
And did that do anything? Was there a second thought about what was going to happen as far as the baptism, you going down there, or were you pretty much set? Were all of you set? Yes, this is going to continue.
We didn't discuss it with my daughter when I heard about the incident, which I didn't until Thursday morning because I was busy getting ready for the trip. I didn't know about it Wednesday night yet. Tom and I both, you know, were appalled, of course, but I never hesitated about going as far as... I mean, this is a big event, our first grandchild, and then... his baptism. In our family, baptism is a huge, huge deal. But not to say that there wasn't apprehension about the whole thing and some, you know, in the back of our head. We felt much more comfortable once we knew that the shooter had been apprehended.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would imagine so.
But all along, we proceeded to go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you, it would be hard to predict just exactly what condition the city would be in after something terrible like that.
Correct.
But the city responded extremely well, did they not?
Yes, and that was obvious on the news and so on immediately Thursday that the city was promoting, especially the people at the AME at Mother Emanuel, we don't want revenge. The families were speaking about forgiveness. The families were totally talking about God's love and wanting to be an example of unity and peace and nonviolence.
Sure, sure. And unfortunately, sometimes families have that mindset, but other people in the community do not.
Exactly.
But this was a fortunate situation. That is to say, in the aftermath, I think the city and its residents handled themselves very, very well.
Yes.
It's truly a model for other communities, I think.
Yes.
You went to Mother Emanuel when you were there. When you were...
Not inside.
No,
but I mean, yes. We had visited... We do these walking things when we're in the city. We just park the car. Most often I take the train, actually, and don't have a vehicle. It's hard to drive around the skinny little streets there. So we always do walking, and we had walked several times past Mother Emanuel. And I had an interest in the Civil War aspect and had taken time to take photographs and stuff of the church in the past, and his historical little plaque and so on. And yeah.
So Mother Emmanuel, which I didn't realize until I read your essay, really is a piece of history. This isn't just a church in a city with a gazillion other churches.
Correct.
I mean, this is significant. So give us a little bit of the history of Mother Emmanuel.
Well, it was organized in... well, its origins have significance in that it was not just a theological organization. It was sociological. It originated from the fact that God loves everyone and everyone the same. So the image of God in man is the same. Well, of course, we're talking about, you know, the black slaves. And so those were its origins. The history, I'm not a historian. I do have, I know that so many historical things went on there. The first night watch when Lincoln, the Emancipation Proclamation was enacted. Lots of picking on black folks. In fact, in Charleston at the time the church began, did not allow all black churches. So there was a separate piece of the church. Black folks weren't allowed to read and write. They weren't allowed to worship alone and that kind of thing. So eventually there was an uprising there. Denmark Vesey was the gentleman, and they were hassled, and finally they went underground in their own little segment until after the Civil War.
I read this in your essay, and this is something that never occurred to me. So you have these churches in the city. Now, some of them, you say, at least at, up to some point, you could not have an all-black church.
Correct.
So whites and blacks worshipped together?
I think they had their separate services, but the congregation itself, there was not black congregation allowed.
Mm. So if, and again, I understand you're not a historian,
yeah.
but maybe you'll know the answer to this. It just occurred to me when I was reading this. So slaves were allowed to go into town to go to a church.
Yes.
Okay. I was always under the impression that any sort of worship service would have taken place on the plantation right under the watchful eye of Massa. But
yes, there were black folks in the city, and I think that's where the congregations gathered from, city folk. It's interesting, the street that Mother Emmanuel is on is called Calhoun, but in the past, the street was known as Boundary Street, because if blacks weren't allowed on the other side of the street, even. So there was definitely, you know, the segregation and so on, and yet there was some mixing going on there.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I'm curious, again, not asking you as a historian.
Put me on the spot here.
No. I'm just wondering if there were free blacks living in the city.
Most likely.
Ah, okay.
I don't know that, though. I don't know. It would make sense.
Sure. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella. And with me today is Jane Griffune. She is a local writer, and we're talking about her piece, I Saw the Holy City. And let's talk about that title, because I'd never heard that about Charleston. Its nickname, if you will, is the Holy City. Because
a lot of folks don't know that, because there are so many historic places of worship in the city. There's over 400 places just in the little town of Charleston. And so it was nicknamed, I don't know when, but the Holy City. If you ever just Google Charleston, you'd soon find that name pops up.
Hmm. And you mentioned a little earlier that you like to take walking tours of the churches and the old buildings.
Well, we go on our own. We don't do tours.
No, I meant personal tours.
We walk, and we have visited several of the churches there, but even just walking past some of the places and the cemeteries on the grounds and so on.
Oh, cemeteries are
just
awesome.
Gorgeous. You could spend a long, long time in Charleston just looking at the churches from the outside. And we've worshipped in Grace Episcopal several times, the Cathedral of St. John the Baptist.
Is that Catholic?
Yes. And yeah, there's just beautiful places to be. Beautiful music, beautiful places, beautiful mm-hmm. structures, beautiful gardens.
And talk about the baptism ritual itself. I mean, that particular ceremony. There was an homage, if you will, to the previous days. I thought that, did I make that up? Did I read it in your essay that there was sort of there was an honor given to Mother Emmanuel or not? Am I making that
up? Well, of course, that was on the mind of everyone in the city, and especially that Sunday morning. I don't think we were the only apprehensive people to go to church that day.
Sure.
Grace Episcopal, just the week before, had one of the pastors as a guest at their service, addressing the congregation. I don't even know under what subject. Mm-hmm. There are several pastors at the Mother Emmanuel Church, and I'm sure their community communicates. So one of the pastors had addressed the church just before, the week before. So, of course, after the ceremonial procession and so on, that was one of the first things that the priest brought up, was the Mother Emmanuel and how they, of course, pray for them and sorrow for them. And I have a good idea that that was going on in all the churches that morning at the services.
Sure. As somebody who's been there a lot more than I and has a feel for the city, can you talk to the idea of the nostalgic affection people still have for the Confederacy there? It's so hard for a northerner like me to even put my head around that. Here you have
very awkward.
Yeah, it really is. And so, you know, I have a couple of questions in my mind. How do you feel as a northerner yourself? I mean, do you feel when you would see the Confederate flag there, you know, how did it make you feel, and did you get the sense that it really was an oppressive symbol when it was up?
I had mixed feelings. I appreciate the Southern heritage, perhaps because of the time I've spent there, and because my daughter lived in the South. And you know, it isn't long. We have a musical family. I come from somewhat of a musical family. I'm not there 2 days and I'm starting to talk in a little Southern. In fact, when I even think about it, I slip into that sometime. The Confederacy, however, is associated in my head with pickup trucks. Drivers that are rude and noisy and fly their flags around and drink beer and act inappropriate and violence. But I have to honestly say, Tom and I had this very discussion on the way down about the Confederate flag, and I sort of played the side of, yes, but look at the heritage. And I knew that we both had talked in the past about the beauty of the plantations and the but more and more, before the weekend was over, it was like, yes, that flag does need to come down. I hadn't realized how offensive it was
sure.
to most people.
Especially when you think about the fact that that flag wasn't flying after the Civil War or even after Reconstruction. They didn't start flying that sucker until they wanted to protest desegregation.
Yes, and yet there's that this is our heritage feel, whether you saw the Confederate flag or not. You know, Shelby Foote always pointed out, and before the war, it was we United States, and then it was the United States after the Civil War, and the South still prefers the United States rather than we. I mean, that was the impression that I got.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have any experience with the people in the other faith communities outside of Grace, in terms of connecting with them personally, as opposed to just going on tours? Have you had any experience with the different people of the different churches
in the city of Charleston?
Yeah.
No, sir.
You also mentioned you visited, at least on the outside, I don't know about inside, the apparently a very historical synagogue.
Yes. No, not indoors.
But tell us about that synagogue. It's the oldest surviving continuous Jewish community.
Correct.
Am I correct?
That's its claim. That's its claim. And we walked past it several times. It happened to be right near the bed and breakfast where we were staying this last time.
Mm-hmm.
On Hassel Street. One of my daughter's best friends attends there. I remember Sarah and my husband Tom had gone there. I don't think they visited indoors. So, no.
And you also mentioned a mosque and that they were out there in force supporting the people at Mother Emanuel.
There is a mosque on King Street in the other direction. I've not visited there. They had made a point of making this huge banner, and it was laid on the grounds by Mother Emanuel. It was so incredible the way where you turned mostly anywhere in the city was signs of, I mean, literal little signs and symbols and flowers and things about, we want to share your pain. We want to help you to Mother Emanuel.
You're saying this is more than just at the church?
Not just at the church, throughout the city.
Really?
The banners were a huge thing, and I included that in my essay about the gorgeous banners. They weren't banners like horizontal. They were huge vertical banners that were, you know, two stories high and three windows wide at least, and they were hung throughout the city in support and unity and concerns of Mother Emanuel.
Oh, that's very impressive.
It was very impressive, and it's maybe I'm naive. Maybe I didn't have a picture of how that Confederacy wasn't so much their definition. But because when I saw these banners, especially on the old Citadel, it's like, oh my gosh, now that says really something, that they would so publicly unite themselves with Mother Emanuel. I mean, that's the old Citadel of the Civil War and the military place of, you know, the battlefields and so on. There were lots of those kinds of contradictions. Fort Sumter is right across the harbor. You can see it when you walk on the Battery. And so it was amazing to me. It did me good to see all that connection.
And I'm sure, knowing human beings, and I've known human beings for a long time, mind you, we are a bundle of contradictions. And it wouldn't surprise me at all that some of the people who are truly sorry that the Confederate flag has been lowered in the city of Charleston would also be devastated by this horrible massacre. And they could be just as pluralistic, just as colorblind as any Northerner. And yet still, when they look at that Confederate flag, they may not even think of desegregation. They may not even think of the Civil War. to them, it just means my grandma and my grandpa and how they raised me and how we say yes, ma'am, and no, sir, and drink sweet tea. I mean, I completely understand that.
It's like how I feel about the church I was raised in.
Which is?
Well, I don't know if this is the place, but...
Sure it is.
Okay, my father was, and my mother separately. My mother was an immigrant. My father belonged to the Dutch Reformed Church in America. I won't say it on the air in Dutch because my Dutch is kind of rusty. My mother, not to be confused with the more mainstream Reformed Church, mm-hmm. but they were all
sure.
Reformed Kerken. And, there are lots of beautiful, wonderful memories. I loved my parents and they were good people. There are also lots of embarrassing history that went on in those churches and even in my childhood in those churches. So I think you're saying the same thing about how people might feel about the Confederacy. It's part of the history. It really is.
Sure,
we can't deny that side either.
No, not at all. Jane, we are out of time for today's episode, but we're hoping that you'll come back next week and we can continue this conversation.
I think that would be great.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella. My guest today has been Jane Griffune, and talking about her essay, I Saw the Holy City, and we'll continue our conversation next week here on WGVU.